Mirror, Mirror, A Good Omens Fiction, written by Improbable Dreams 900, read by God of Laundry Baskets. Chapter 9, A Nice Cup of Tea. They emerged back into Crowley's Mayfair flat through the portal Crowley had opened behind the sofa, the white circle dwindling shut behind them. Aziraphale had begun to lean heavily on Crowley as they passed through the first circle, Crowley hissing quite fiercely at any demon unfortunate enough to cross their path. And now he quickly brought Aziraphale over to the sofa and helped them sink onto the soft cushions. "Sorry about the mess," Crowley said as he propped the sword up against the edge of the sofa. Shards of glass from the shattered window and television still littered the floor, and his begonia was lying withered on the floor near the window, pot overturned and soil scattered across the white carpet. Aziraphale's attention appeared to have been arrested by the dark red smear still on the edge of the coffee table, though, and he looked up at Crowley, expression a mix of concern and exhaustion. "Did you..." "Him, not me," Crowley dismissed, hesitantly extending a hand towards Aziraphale's injured shoulder, which was oozing fresh blood. "Can I..." Aziraphale flicked his gaze down to the table and turned his head away slightly. "Just give me a moment." Crowley's fingers twitched against each other nervously, but he nodded and quickly retracted his hand. "Can I... get you anything?" Crowley asked, unwilling to stand by, doing nothing while Aziraphale sat there by himself, very pale and clearly in pain. "A cup of tea or something." Aziraphale made an amused noise and looked up at him. "My dear, you don't make tea." "No, but..." "But you spent the last who knows how long in hell, and look like you're about to faint any minute," Crowley finished silently. "If you won't let me heal you, then let me help you." "I could try," he settled on. "If you want to," Aziraphale said, eyelids sliding closed as he sank backwards into the sofa, grimacing a little. Crowley nodded nervously and padded into his kitchen, looking around at his completely empty worktops. He supposed he could just miracle Aziraphale a cup of tea, but he got the impression that the angel needed a little breathing room, and the ritual of making actual tea would be a good way to distract himself. So Crowley miracled an electric kettle into existence, plugged it into an outlet he had never once used, filled the detachable kettle with water from the tap, replaced it on its base, and turned it on. A pleasant blue light blinked on, and Crowley stared at it, waiting. He kept his ears pricked for any sounds from Aziraphale in the next room, but he didn't hear anything besides the faint squeaks of the cushions as Aziraphale shifted on the sofa. After what seemed like forever, the kettle started making a slight gurgling noise, and shortly thereafter, it beeped at him. Crowley didn't have any teacups on hand. His covers were equally as empty as his worktops, so he miracled one into existence and poured the hot water from the kettle into it. Next, he miracled an Earl Grey teabag into his hand and dropped it into the cup. Crowley spent another 3 minutes staring at the cup and occasionally shifting the teabag using the string. Why wasn't Aziraphale letting him heal him? The obvious answer was that he didn't trust Crowley to do it, which made perfect sense given what had occurred. In fact, Aziraphale's actions all made perfect sense, which was why Crowley didn't understand why his stomach was tying itself in knots over them. He knew he couldn't honestly expect Aziraphale to magically forgive him for such a massive betrayal of his trust, even if Crowley hadn't actually done the betraying. But that line of reasoning didn't seem to offer much solace. Crowley frowned at the tea worriedly and decided it had seeped long enough. He pulled the bag out, miracled it away with a wave of his hand, and stirred in a bit of sugar and milk with the thought. He brought it out of the kitchen and over to where Aziraphale was still sitting on the sofa, looking very tired. "Here," Crowley said, holding out the cup of tea. Aziraphale's eyes flickered open, gaze landing first on the teacup and then on Crowley. He looked almost surprised. "Thank you," Aziraphale said, carefully taking the tea from him. The ceramic cup trembled in his hand, and Crowley felt his worry double. "Are you sure?" he began nervously. Aziraphale gave a short sigh and stared down at his teacup. "Go ahead." Crowley blinked. Really? Yes. Aziraphale leaned forward, moving to set the teacup on the coffee table, but halfway through the motion he suddenly paled even further, hand shaking so strongly the tea threatened to splash over the rim. Crowley quickly moved to help, taking the cup from the angel and setting it on the glass surface of the table. Aziraphale shakily nodded his thanks and sat back on the sofa, face as white as a sheet. Crowley wasted no time in sitting down next to him and carefully taking his hand. Crowley drew Aziraphale's hand over to his lap, twined their fingers together, and pulled his other hand over the top of Aziraphale's. The angel's hand was cold between his, and Crowley could feel how weak his friend's aura was, pale and shallow in some indescribable way. He took a deep breath and opened himself, letting his power flow into Aziraphale. He felt it brush over raw areas that prickled uncomfortably, and he focused his power there, mending bone, muscle, and skin with the brush of his aura. Beside him, he heard Aziraphale let out a relieved-sounding sigh. Crowley kept it up for over a minute, and then glanced up and over at Aziraphale to see how he was doing. The deep bite mark in Aziraphale's shoulder was almost completely gone, and some color had returned to his cheeks. The angel's aura had strengthened, too, though much of its missing luster would be regained by a solid nap and some cream cakes. Aziraphale's hand warmed steadily between his, until Crowley felt his own fingers grow cold in compensation. Crowley was beginning to feel himself run low on power. He again regretted having taken the time to heal himself earlier, so he slowly tapered off the amount he was pouring into Aziraphale until the connection between them faded and blinked out. Aziraphale let out a breath, and it sounded steady. "Thank you." "No problem," Crowley said. Crowley expected Aziraphale to pull his hand away now that they were finished, but instead he remained motionless, head tilted back against the sofa and eyes closed. Crowley wondered if he was expected to relinquish Aziraphale's hand. After what was probably an uncomfortably long period of time, Crowley decided Aziraphale was definitely wanting him to let go and quickly did so, standing up to cover the awkwardness of the motion. Crowley grabbed the teacup from the table and pushed it into Aziraphale's hands as the angel's eyes blinked open. "Here you go." Crowley felt Aziraphale's gaze hot on his collar as he straightened up and hastily racked his mind for something to busy himself with. His eyes fell on where his begonia was lying not far away on the carpet, soil scattered around it, and he crossed to it. He righted the pot, gently gathering up the brittle remains of the plant and placed them back inside it, and miracled the soil off his pristine carpet with a thought, funneling it back into the pot. When the last clumps of earth had fallen back into place, he carefully took the pot over to the windowsill and slid it back into its spot by the others. All of his plants were equally withered, stems brown and brittle, and Crowley made a show of frowning down at their crinkled leaves and poking at their hollow branches, acutely aware that Aziraphale was still watching him from the sofa. Aziraphale quietly cleared his throat. "Crowley?" "Crowley asked, running a hand along his African viola's crinkled leaves and willing them to live again. The leaves turned flush and green beneath his touch, and Crowley felt what little magic he had left deplete further. "What you said," Aziraphale began haltingly. "When you and he were talking to me." Crowley hastily touched his shriveled haorthia and poured power into it, determined to run himself dry before he acknowledged what Aziraphale was talking about. Which part?" he asked evasively. "You know which part." Crowley made a noncommittal noise and moved his hand to the remains of his hoya. He was running very low on power now, and he felt his chest begin to tighten as the plant's leaves greened and thickened under his touch. "Did you mean it?" Aziraphale asked hesitantly. Crowley froze, a hand halfway to his shriveled hibiscus, and then he asked himself, had he meant it? He hadn't intended to say it. He hadn't ever really even thought it before. But once the words had crossed Crawley's lips, Crowley hadn't given his own response a second thought. He'd just known he didn't want Aziraphale to hear those words from someone who didn't mean them. From someone who didn't care like he did. And that was what it all came down to. Crowley didn't know if he loved Aziraphale, but he did know that he cared a great deal for him, far more than he had any right to. He cared about Aziraphale's well-being and happiness. He cared whenever the angel was slighted or injured, and he cared about his own future and what it might look like if Aziraphale wasn't in it. He tried not to think too much about that particular scenario, but that had been the future he'd found himself facing when he stepped foot in Crawley's world. Had Crowley not been able to return, or if Crawley had succeeded in killing Aziraphale while Crowley was still trapped? Crowley's eyes dropped to the wrinkled, brittle leaves of the hibiscus. He had spent the last 6 millennia trying to teach himself how not to care about things. The cities he lived in were razed to the ground. The possessions he cherished were eaten away by sheer time. And the people he rubbed shoulders with died around him like fruit flies. But Crowley had never been any good at emotionally detaching himself from the world. He had loved Eden, and that had led to his fall. So he had promised himself he would never care that much about anything ever again. And though he couldn't stop himself from caring about the world, he never allowed himself to think of his affection in permanent terms. It helped that anything he loved turned to dust before he had the chance to get too attached. The world changed quickly, and as time unspooled into centuries and then millennia, Crowley had learned to care about things with the full understanding that they would not last forever. This prevented too deep of an attachment, and thereby saved a lot of heartache. Needless to say, this method failed spectacularly where Aziraphale was concerned. Crowley had quickly become far too invested in Aziraphale's well-being, to the extent that he hadn't been able to emotionally detach himself and hadn't really wanted to. Aziraphale had drawn out of Crowley a part of himself that he hadn't even known was there, and he hadn't wanted to lose that. He hadn't wanted to lose Aziraphale. He knew there wasn't much in himself that Aziraphale probably saw a great deal of value in. He was a demon, after all. But Crowley had always been an optimist. He'd hoped that, maybe, if he just cared enough, he would keep them together by sheer force of will. And then Crawley had sauntered into his life and torn apart all those tenuous hopes. Crowley had found himself in his double's demolished London, where the only way out was through Lucifer himself. It was as much a test of his resolve as he could imagine. But Crowley knew that where there was a will, there was a way. He was willing to do whatever was necessary to get back to Aziraphale, if he had to move heaven and earth to do it. But then, in the bowels of his own familiar hell, Aziraphale had looked back and forth between the Crowley that had taken the life of his own Aziraphale and the Crowley who would give his life for his, and chosen the former. And, for the first time, Crowley had realized that it didn't matter how much he cared. Crowley didn't give a rat's arse whether Aziraphale lived or died, but Aziraphale had chosen him over Crowley anyway. Aziraphale hadn't even been able to tell the difference between them. And when Aziraphale had left them there, the flaming sword pointed at his throat, Crowley had suddenly felt his entire world drop out from under him. Because when no one and nothing had been there for him, Aziraphale had been there. And he hadn't been sure what he was supposed to do if Aziraphale truly wanted no part of him. Because what if, in the end, Aziraphale cared no more than Crowley did? Crowley looked back at his withered hibiscus and let out a silent breath, his back still to Aziraphale. He'd allowed himself to care too much, and he knew he was paying the price at last. He'd once entertained the notion that Aziraphale might care for him too, but he'd seen the look of confusion in Aziraphale's eyes as first Crowley and then Crowley had made their matching declarations. Not a look of understanding or hope or even pity. Confusion. He'd looked back and forth between them and not even understood how Crowley could have said such a thing. And now Crowley knew that any notions of Aziraphale caring for him in return had been even more far-fetched than he'd imagined. If Aziraphale hadn't even realized the extent to which Crowley cared for him, how could he expect even a sliver of that in return? Crowley wished everything would just go back to the way it had been before. He wanted to be free to care for Aziraphale and pretend that Aziraphale might care in return. He wanted to go back to driving Aziraphale to the Ritz and sitting, watching him read his favorite books. He wanted to listen to Aziraphale harp on the terrible music those Americans were making these days and take him to the British Museum so they could make fun of the incorrect artifact labels. Blast it all, he even wanted to make Aziraphale as many cups of tea as the angel could possibly drink. He wanted it so badly his chest hurt, and only now did he properly understand that he'd been a fool to think those things might ever have been his. Crowley swallowed heavily. He'd been damned since the moment Crowley opened his mouth, but if he was damned, he supposed miserably, he might as well be damned for telling the truth. "Yes," he said. I think I did." There was a long moment of silence. Crowley bit his lip and looked down at the hibiscus. He wasn't sure how Aziraphale was going to react, and prepared himself for the worst. "Oh," Aziraphale said after a long moment. "I didn't know that." Crowley didn't respond straight away, instead pouring life back into his hibiscus until he felt himself begin to grow a little dizzy with the effort. Crowley licked his lips, mouth suddenly dry. "Is that okay?" Aziraphale's response was quicker this time. "Yes, of course." Crowley ran a finger along the edge of one of his hibiscus's ridged leaves and supposed he should have anticipated that response. Aziraphale was an angel after all. He couldn't exactly go around dissuading people of their affections. And they'd been friends for so long, he'd probably want to let him down easy. Carly heard Aziraphale get up from the sofa. My dear, he said carefully. It's okay, Crowley said quickly, feeling his heart constrict in his chest. You can go. I get it. I'm a demon, so what do I know about love anyway? Besides, you'll probably have to smite me one of these days. Attachment is ridiculous. Crowley, Aziraphale said, and Crowley could tell he was drawing nearer. Crowley hastily moved to his next plant, a shriveled, split-leaf philodendron. He knew what Aziraphale was going to do, and he didn't know if he could stand it. The angel would sit him down and very carefully and patiently explain that it was okay for Crowley to feel this way, but Aziraphale just didn't feel the same in return, and if he was lucky, or perhaps exceptionally unlucky, Aziraphale would say that they could work through this together and still be friends. Except Crowley didn't want to work through it, and he didn't know if he could stand the kindness and pity in Aziraphale's eyes as he rejected him. Please, Zira, I'd rather you just go, Crowley said, voice not as steady as he would have liked. He touched the philodendron, and as he poured life into it, he felt his power run dangerously low. He shriveled as the backlash hit him, a sharp grating feeling in his chest. Crowley, my dear, Aziraphale said kindly, and Crowley knew that the angel was directly behind him. Crowley fixed his gaze on the edge of the philodendron's pot and put a hand on it for support, terrified of what would happen next. Crowley squeezed his eyes shut as he fought against the tears he felt building behind his sinuses. He knew he was about to lose Aziraphale and a large part of himself along with the angel, and he didn't know if he could take it. Look at me, Aziraphale said gently, and Crowley felt Aziraphale's touch on his shoulder. Crowley shivered and wished he was wearing his sunglasses. Better yet, he wished he was somewhere else entirely, somewhere miles away where he could pretend all of this wasn't happening. But Aziraphale's touch was persistent, and he began gently turning Crowley around. Crowley went unwillingly until he finally was facing Aziraphale. Crowley couldn't bear to look him in the eye, though, so he fixed his gaze on Aziraphale's shoes, even though he wasn't more than a foot away. Crowley, Aziraphale said again, voice unbelievably kind. He put a hand on Crowley's chin and began lifting his gaze up. Crowley led him until finally he reluctantly met Aziraphale's gaze. Crowley was aware he must look a mess. He was trembling a little from overexerting himself magically, and the terror in his eyes must have been clear, a few tears beginning to streak down his cheeks. But the look in Aziraphale's eyes was unfathomably kind and warm. I think I might feel the same, Aziraphale confessed and kissed him. Aziraphale's feathers were soft under Crowley's fingers, the veins silky and smooth. As Crowley ran his forefinger and thumb down each feather, he banished the blotches of blood and soot from the veins and mended any broken quills. The wings of angels, both fallen and not, were notoriously hard to look after and particularly impervious to miracles. This was very handy in some cases, such as preventing tampering during flight, but very burdensome in others, such as healing. Wings could be healed with miracles, but it required a great deal of concentrated effort to get anything to stick. Crowley ran his fingers carefully down another of Aziraphale's feathers, wishing away the smear of blood along one side. Cleaning was easy enough, as long as it was just pulling material off the feathers, but healing broken quills, or worse, broken bones, was exhausting and time-consuming. Crowley had already spent some time earlier that morning working on the deep bite marks on the leading edge of Aziraphale's right wing, and was taking a break by preening through the rest of Aziraphale's feathers and pulling out any too damaged to heal. Crowley? Aziraphale asked. Yes? One of Aziraphale's feathers came loose under Crowley's gentle touch, and he transferred it to the small heap next to him on the bed. Why is there a television in your bedroom? Crowley continued to work his way along Aziraphale's secondaries. It's a thing humans do. A moment later. But do you use it? Why not just use the one in the lounge? Humans, Crowley informed the angel as he ran his finger down another feather, are lazy. And if you hadn't noticed, the telly in the lounge is not in any condition for watching. Aziraphale made a noncommittal noise, but fell silent. They were sitting on the bed in Crowley's flat, Aziraphale perched on the edge while Crowley sat behind him on the mattress. They decided this was the best place for the preening, and had moved there after falling asleep together on the sofa the previous night. Crowley was still reeling a little from the revelations of yesterday, but had regained some of his demonic powers overnight, and had jumped at the chance to spend several hours sitting with Aziraphale and combing through the angel's feathers one by one. The simplicity of the task, combined with the knowledge that he was taking care of his angel, made it the perfect task to busy his hands with, while his heart soared and his brain processed. Are you sure you don't want a book or something? Crowley asked after a long silence, a little unnerved by Aziraphale's quietness and the fact that he couldn't see his face. This is going to take a while longer. No, that's perfectly all right, Aziraphale replied calmly, folding his hands neatly in his lap. Crowley bit the inside of his mouth and kept his gaze focused on the next of Aziraphale's secondaries as he ran it through his fingers, banishing the dark smear of soot from the brilliant white veins. Aziraphale sat quietly, occasionally shifting a little or scratching his nose, but he seemed content to just sit there and let Crowley go through his feathers one by one. Crowley was happy to do it, but the silence was giving him altogether too much time to reflect on the events of the last few days. His mind slowly slid from happy matters to the less pleasant ones, and the light feeling in his stomach started to evaporate. Zira, Crowley asked after a long moment, running his fingers down another feather and spending a moment straightening a bent quill. Can I ask you something? Of course. Crowley hesitated, fingers pausing on the feather he'd just healed. What does my aura feel like to you? He saw Aziraphale turn his head slightly in surprise. Is it? Crowley forcefully returned his gaze to Aziraphale's wing and moved on to the next feather, his voice losing some of its strength. Cold? My dear, Aziraphale replied a little sternly. Why ever would you ask that? Crowley opened his mouth to say that it was for no reason in particular, but he knew Aziraphale would see through the lie immediately. Instead, he ran his fingers down Aziraphale's feather, stroking the veins until it lay smoothly next to its fellows. Crawley's was, Crowley said at last. Aziraphale shifted on the edge of the bed, one of his wings twitching slightly. You're not him, Crowley. No, Crowley agreed quickly. But our auras must have been close, right? They fooled you. Aziraphale sighed, and Crowley nervously ran his finger down the next of the angel's feathers, hoping he wouldn't pull away. He didn't, but when he responded, his voice was heavy. Below was messing with my head, That's all. Crowley digested that. So... No, Crowley, Aziraphale said, and this time there was a hint of a smile in his voice. Your aura isn't cold. It's quite warm, actually, but comfortably so. Like a nice cup of tea. Crowley felt something like relief pass through him, followed by a slight warmth in his cheeks. He gently ran his fingers down another feather. Oh. Aziraphale made an amused noise, and Crowley found himself smiling a little as he continued to work his way through Aziraphale's beautiful feathers, restoring them one by one to a state that rivaled Crowley's own. They stayed that way for a few more long moments, until slowly, against his wishes, Crowley's thoughts slid inexorably back into unpleasant ground. Aziraphale, he asked after a moment. Yes. Crowley ran his fingers along another feather, and it shifted under his touch. Why do you think the sword wouldn't light for me? The feather shifted under his touch again, and Crowley carefully tugged on it. It wiggled, but it wouldn't come free. It's a divine blade, Aziraphale explained. It takes more than power to light. I know, Crowley said, and tugged on the feather harder. It was clearly unmoored, but refused to pull free. But it's not like I'm innocent. Crowley gave the feather a sharp yank, and it came free. Aziraphale flinched at the same moment, and Crowley realized belatedly that it must have still been partially attached. Crap, Aziraphale, I'm sorry, Crowley said hastily, as he saw the bright red tip of the feather in his hand. It's fine, Aziraphale said, but flinched again as Crowley dropped the feather and slipped his hand into the small recess it had just vacated, reaching up towards where the feather had been anchored. Soon he was up to his elbow in Aziraphale's feathers as he prodded around experimentally with his fingertips. One of them touched something sticky and warm, and Crowley quickly funneled some power through his fingers to heal the injury he had inadvertently caused. Crowley pulled his arm free, miracled Aziraphale's blood off his fingertips, and hastily began combing Aziraphale's feathers back into place. Sorry, he repeated. Aziraphale shook his wings slightly, and his feathers smoothed back into place. Anyway, Crowley repeated once he resumed his place in Aziraphale's secondaries, it's not like I haven't killed people. Lots of people. I mean, you alone, I've killed loads of times. You've discorporated me loads of times, Aziraphale corrected. What's the difference? It still felt like killing, as far as Crowley was concerned. A little too much like killing, actually. The difference is, I come back later, Aziraphale pointed out. And you know that. Okay, Crowley allowed. But I've actually killed people, too. Humans, like Ophelia Westfield, or that bloke Gordianus from Carthage. You know as well as I do that Ophelia was an accident. And wasn't that Roman fellow the one who tried to poison you and then cornered you in an alley? Said Crowley. You're thinking of Faustius of Ostia. Gordianus was the one who I shot during archery practice. Well, then Faustius was definitely self-defense, and I seem to recall you tried to save that other fellow once you realized what had happened. Crowley frowned and ran his fingers over another of Aziraphale's feathers. What about Charles Hindengard, then? I definitely killed him. I seem to recall he was trying to kill me at the time, Aziraphale said mildly. So I suppose that one doesn't count either? You were a little upset. That doesn't mean I'm, I don't know, a pure spirit or anything, Crowley argued. So what if it wasn't premeditated? I still did it. Crowley could still remember doing it, actually, after all these years. He could still remember all of them, all the lives he had ever taken, far more vividly than he cared to. I don't think it's as simple as that, my dear. How about those soldiers during the Punic Wars, then? Or the 30 Years' War? Or the First World War? There were 8 in there. Or Richard Burbank? Or Salvador Perez? Tandiwe Koski? Frank Darkmouth? Bashieve of Gibbon? That grocer on Howell Lane? Crowley could feel himself beginning to get a little upset, and he took a deep breath to calm himself before he could yank another of Aziraphale's beautiful feathers out. He knew this shouldn't be bothering him as much as it did, particularly since discussing it was putting a damper on what should have been an untroubled day. But he couldn't help it. Crowley had been right there, and Crowley had the sword in his hand. He could have killed him right then and there, and saved a lot of heartache for himself and Aziraphale both. If their places had been reversed, Aziraphale would have killed Crowley without a second thought. But when the moment had come, the sword had refused to light. I don't understand, Crowley said heavily, looking down at Aziraphale's feathers and feeling increasingly poorly about having brought the subject up. I'm a demon. I should have been able to light it. Aziraphale's wings shifted as he turned his head towards Crowley slightly. Crowley, do you know how many humans I've killed? Crowley shrugged and carefully cleaned another of Aziraphale's feathers. Not really. No. Aziraphale sighed, and his wings drooped slightly. Me neither. I think that's a difference between us, Crowley. You remember their names. Surprised, Crowley took a moment for that to sink in. He ran his fingers along another of Aziraphale's feathers. You honestly don't remember? Aziraphale shrugged. Not really. Huh. Aziraphale shifted on the edge of the bed. Just because you've killed, he explained, doesn't mean you're a killer. I think that's what the sword needs to light. It needs to have intent, yes, but it also needs strength of will. You need to be prepared to actually do the deed. Crowley was silent, quietly working his way further through Aziraphale's feathers. He supposed he'd always known he had more regard for human life than Aziraphale, oddly enough, but he hadn't thought the disparity was so large. Maybe you just don't have it in you, Aziraphale suggested. But that's okay. Cold-blooded murder is something all its own. But you lit it so easily, Crowley protested. You're an angel. Shouldn't I? My dear, Aziraphale broke in gently. Do you think that's something I'm proud of? Crowley fell silent, shifting to another section of feathers and concentrating on doing a thorough job. Aziraphale seemed satisfied that he'd made his point, and settled back into his place on the edge of the bed. But what if, Crowley stated nervously after a long moment, what if something like this happens again? I had Crowley right there. I could have finished him off, but the sword, and he could light it. And what if you're in danger, and I... Aziraphale's wings half folded as he twisted to better face Crowley. He pulled himself further back onto the bed, looping his wing around Crowley until they were sitting side by side. Crowley eyed Aziraphale uncertainly, But Aziraphale only wrapped an arm around his shoulders and drew him close. It was surprisingly comfortable, and Crowley felt himself leaning closer automatically. "Now you listen to me, Crowley. If anything like this ever happens again, just direct whoever it is to me, and I'll kill them myself." Crowley opened his mouth to clarify his concern, but Aziraphale held up a hand and continued over him. "And if something happens to me, and you're all on your own, then you'll either find it in you, or you won't. And I want you to know that it's perfectly okay either way. Just because I can light the sword, or because Crawleg could, doesn't mean you have to be able to as well." The hand Aziraphale had on Crowley's far shoulder rubbed up and down reassuringly. "You're not Crawley. You're nothing like him. Please believe me. He was... well, never mind what he was. You're you. And I don't want you to try and change to be more like him, or more like me, for that matter. I like you as you are far better than I liked him. And, frankly, I don't know what I'd do with two of myself." Aziraphale laughed a little nervously, and Crowley realized, with surprise, that Aziraphale couldn't tell if he was actually doing a good job of comforting him. "Probably try to lure me up to heaven," Crowley suggested, "and send you to an alternate universe." Aziraphale just stared at him for a few seconds, and then he finally seemed to put together what Crowley was saying. He laughed and gave Crowley's shoulders a squeeze. "I hope not." Crowley smiled a little and felt himself relax when he met Aziraphale's gaze. He leaned against his angel and drank in the steady warmth of Aziraphale's presence. He was so very glad he hadn't ended up trapped in that other universe after all. Not only would he have missed Aziraphale desperately, but he would have missed this new, whatever this was between them. Crowley turned his head up and gave Aziraphale a small, tentative kiss on the cheek. Aziraphale smiled and squeezed his shoulder again, and when Crowley nestled the side of his head into the crook of Aziraphale's shoulder, he felt the angel carefully plant a matching kiss in his hair. Crowley let out a contented sigh. They stayed that way for a long moment, Aziraphale's half-preened wing slowly draping itself around Crowley's shoulders. "So, Angel, what do we do now?" Crowley asked at last. He didn't have to clarify what he meant. Aziraphale ran the side of his thumb along Crowley's shoulder. "What do you want to do, my dear?" Crowley let out a breath. "I dunno." There was a brief silence, and then Aziraphale tilted his head over towards Crowley. "How about we start with the Ritz?" End of chapter 9.